Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, if you would like to, you could also visit our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, they are actually archived at the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about facing challenges and how to overcome them. And we've been talking about this topic a little bit in prior shows, but I've gotten quite a few questions, and we announced the topic in advance, and I think that the questions actually go into two categories. There's leadership and personal challenges about ourselves, because we're usually the leader. In fact, we pretty much always are. And group getting consensus type challenges. And those are two very different things, right? So let's start out talking about the leadership and personal challenges. And because that's what we need to handle first so that we can be an effective leader and then bring the group to consensus and meet those challenges, right? Yeah. So let's talk about what we face from a more personal leadership level as people, as leaders, as people who have been called upon to, in our context, to lead a workshop, a seminar, an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, whatever it is that we are doing that we've been called upon to lead. So what kind of challenges do we face? And thank you all for being here. I see we have lots of folks, lots of participation. Yay! Thank you for being here. You know what? I'm going to say that the first issue that comes up and that we're going to talk about today and that people are talking about, and thank you for all of your participation, is going to be lack of experience. So what should we do about that? We have a personal issue, really, because we don't have too much experience in doing the workshop, seminars, mediation, negotiation, whatever it is that we're doing, that causes us to need to lead a group to consensus so that we can go forward and successfully achieve our goal. Yeah. And so, and that's the key to it. Sometimes if you are inexperienced, and I've seen this occasionally in groups that I've been, well, all right, usually it's groups that I've been asked to lead after it hasn't worked. And really the reason that the person who before me was not very effective was really because of lack of experience, and they let the group fall apart. They didn't keep them moving forward. We talk about the process a lot on this show, and it really is a process. You have to keep moving forward so that you can get to your goal within, well, a reasonable time, depending on what it is you're trying to do. You know, it sometimes the goal can be achieved fairly promptly because, or it has a time limit, yeah. People are saying that sometimes it has a time limit. It needs to get on a ballot, for example. You need to collect signatures. And in the United States, in most states, and I don't think all of them, but I'm not positive, if you want to get something on the ballot to be voted on by the constituents, by the citizens, you have a time limit with which you have to make your proposal. You make what you want to put on the ballot, and you present it to the government, but they allow it. But you have to get a bunch of signatures, a minimum requirement from citizens that says that there's enough people interested in this. It doesn't say which way they're going to vote, but enough people interested in this that it needs to go on the ballot. Which is reasonable, of course, because otherwise if you just could make a suggestion, the voting process would take like 7 hours each person. there would be thousands of suggestions. But we're kind of an opinionated group, Americans. But see, it would be a time limit. You'd have to get your proposal together, you know, and that's got a form to it, and it's a very small fee. And then you would have to present it within a timely manner, and then you would have to get enough signatures from citizens, and they actually go out onto the streets. They have volunteers, and there are actually companies that do this too, where you have mostly youngish people, because they can stand on street corners, and they actually ask people to sign a petition. Mm-hmm. And so that they get enough signatures. They actually literally go door to door. They stand on street corners in big urban areas and like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's got a time limit. But sometimes a group falls apart because there's no time limit and it seems like a long time, right? And I always use, and you guys have heard me say this before, those of you who have been here before, thank you for being here and for all of your participation. Sometimes something has a very long process, like Rotary and curing and eliminating polio from the face of the earth. Well, what a concept! You know, but you have to keep people's interest, and you have to show that we're getting there. It's just going to take a little while. I mean, polio's a biggie, right? Right, yeah. So, leadership and personal lack of experience. And sometimes we are called in after someone with lack of experience doesn't make it. So what should we do if we're the person with the lack of experience? That happens sometimes. You know, it even happens after you've got lots of experience like I do and some of us do. Yeah. And people are saying even if you are very experienced at doing mediations and seminars and workshops and like that, sometimes you don't have experience in the topic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you need to kind of get up to speed. I've had that. Mm-hmm. Now, it is true, excuse me, that you get a little bit specialized and that you get repeat clients. So it doesn't happen so much, but sometimes you don't know anything about the topic. You should admit this to yourself and go do something about it. Yeah. So what should we do? Sylvia and a lot of other people are saying that the best thing to do if you lack experience is to find a mentor. Yes, that would be wonderful. Now, sometimes you can't, but if you can find a mentor who's willing to let you, for example, shadow him or her and really learn, and also a mentor who would allow you to call them and ask them questions and opinions and what should I do, right? Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of a funny thing to say. George and others are saying that you need a mentor who will do emergency triage. Sometimes, yeah, which would be you're in the middle of something, you call a timeout, and you sneak out your cell phone and make an emergency call. What should I do? This has happened. Yeah, but that would be a wonderful mentor. And I have had mentors in my day, and I have mentored. So, yeah, I'm quite fond of that. And it's a wonderful thing if you can find a mentor. Sometimes it's a little bit harder to find. It depends what you're doing, and it depends if you don't want to accidentally take sides by having a mentor from one side from one of the sides, because you want to be the impartial third party. Mm-hmm. Nick and others are saying that you could take classes, and there's organizations like the Toastmasters who help to get people some experience. We don't really advertise stuff on this program, but organizations like the Toastmasters are for public speaking, I believe. So if you're kind of shy and you don't, and it's hard for you to lead people and to stand up in front of them and tell them what they should do, that might be a good idea. And then, yes, there's lots of classes on how to do this. And in big urban areas, they're easy to find to go to. But quite frankly, of course, there's always online, right? You can take online classes and read a book even and like that on how to do this and would give you good tips. And yes, thank you. People who say you can listen to this show. Well, thank you. How nice of you. Yes, there's this show that you can listen to on a regular basis, and we talk about only practical things, don't we? Because this is not a show of theoretical ideas. We talk about stuff that matters and what we should do about it, not the real practicality of what should be done, and not the, oh, well, you know, this is just a theory. Let's see what it is. No, yeah, you can listen to the show. And you can listen to archive shows, right? www.recipeforpeacenow.com is our website. Yay. So you could actually listen to advice and classes and maybe join an organization. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is a good point Imani and others are making, that you could just do it online because YouTube has just about everything that you ever wanted to learn. You can learn on YouTube. You got to be a little careful because it's done by individuals, and you got to think about what they're telling you and whether or not it's valid. Because sometimes, I was taught by a lovely young associate of mine that if you look at YouTube and you look at how many views it's gotten and how long it's been out and like that, it gives you an idea of whether people have found it to be valid. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a rule of thumb. Uh-huh. And I apologize. This is a global show, of course. And I happen to be an American, but this show is broadcast globally. Some places don't have access to YouTube. This is absolutely true. It is a free website where people make videos of how to do things, for lack of a better word. And yes, a lot of crazy, stupid videos too about themselves. I don't know. Pity their iguana or something. But you know what I mean. But there's good stuff, and you look it up by topic so that you avoid the, for lack of a better word, the spam, the just junk out there. Yeah. So YouTube would be a good way if you have access to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, if I may put in a teeny-weeny plug, Recipe for Peace Now also does workshops and seminars. Mm-hmm. Pardon me. Usually for organizations, usually for businesses, if they are open to the public, it will be on our website. At the moment, we don't have any open to the public. I love you, all of you, and I'm glad that you're here, and I'm proud and pleased that you're my listeners, but a lot of times we get hired internally to an organization. So it's kind of like, well, if there's a if we can sell tickets to the outside, we put it on the website. Yeah, Tavon and others are saying that if you've got an employee training ability, if somebody's offering you some sort of employee training, you should go, even if you don't have to, even if it's not required by your job. Usually employee training seminars like the ones that Recipe for Peace Now does are free to the participants. You got to sign up early for ours. I don't know about anything else because we have it's not really a set number of people. Pardon me. But it is kind of a set number of seats in the room. Does that make sense? Some places have an auditorium, and there are lots of availability. And some places have, they only got like 50 chairs. And you could stand in the back of the room, I suppose. But so you've got to sign up early for an employee training. But it's a good point Tavon and others are making, that even if it doesn't seem like it's real pertinent, it usually will give you some pointers, especially if it's in the area of what Tavon refers to as customer relations. And we're getting a lot of agreement about that. Because basically speaking, employee training is often about getting along with other people and how to handle them. Yeah. And even if it's technical in some way, because people are saying that they have technical employee training, well, you know, it's always interesting to see someone lead a group, right? And you can kind of judge how they're doing, and then you can judge why you liked something and it kept your interest, and why you didn't like something and you thought that it was bad for the group dynamic, right? Because whenever somebody's leading a group, it's interesting to participate and to watch and to think about it, to make an analysis, and it's because it improves you. I always like to go into a seminar or a workshop if I've got time, and I like to see other people do it. Yeah, I do. Because even in this stage of the game, and I've been doing it for more than 30 years, I think it's interesting. And people do new things, too. I like to see what kind of technology they're using. Mm-hmm. I like to see how they're keeping the group together, what the group dynamic is. Pardon me. I like to talk to the other participants and see what they think. Yeah, it's interesting. It keeps it fresh. And then I'm not just doing the same thing by rote all the time. Because things change, opinions change, and within the 30 years that I've been doing this, the generation has changed, right? Yeah. We've got new people because they're entering the workforce and they're in their late 20s and early 30s. So I can't do the same thing that I did 30 years ago. It's dated. Mm-hmm. So you have to keep, even if you've got experience, it's interesting to go and look at other groups, other ways that people are doing things. Mm-hmm. So study other groups is a really good idea, that Imani said, and Tavon with the employee training. We've got a lot of agreement. A lot of people are saying the same thing, and it's very nice, lovely. Thank you for all of your participation. And others are saying you should join as a participant and observe the leader and their group dynamic control. Group dynamic control. We kind of are, right? We're kind of the person that controls the group dynamic. That's what keeps us together as a group, what keeps the interest level high, and what keeps us moving forward. Yeah, group dynamic control. What a cool word. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Charlton, pardon me, sorry about that. Kind of got off a plane again. I'm always blaming that. Probably it's just allergies. I always think on a plane you catch something. Hang on. Excuse me. Took a sip of water. Charles and others are saying that the best way to get some experience is to see if you can volunteer to assist for free. Yeah. And then you can be in on things and listen and maybe get yourself a mentor. Remember, that was the first thing we talked about. Yeah. And people need volunteers. Yeah. You can volunteer to help. Volunteer to, I don't know, be the organizer in some way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of times a group will allow you to do that, an organization perhaps. Mm-hmm. It depends if it's private, if it's proprietary. That's kind of the key to it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about lack of experience as one of the personal leadership challenges. And I can see that the other really big one that we're going to talk about, the big topic, is lack of confidence, I'm going to call it. Even if you have some experience, sometimes leaders lack confidence. So what should we do about that? You've got some experience. You should be up for it. But, you kind of lack the confidence to do it. You don't feel that maybe you're competent to lead the group. And you wish that somebody else would do it. Yeah. It's kind of like, can't somebody else lead this? I have that occasionally. It doesn't deter me, of course. Especially if this is kind of crass. But if you're the paid third party impartial, you're the mediator and like that, well, that makes it a lot more interesting, now, doesn't it? Yeah. So it's not a lack of competence. It's like, I don't know that I'm the first person to see this. Let's see. Let's get up to speed. So how should we get up to speed? So we can have confidence in ourselves as the leader. Mm-hmm. This is a very good point that Beth and others are making, that gaining the experience that we just talked about will boost our confidence. Yeah, if you've got a lot of experience, you've done it before, you've got more confidence in yourself, right? Yeah, I did this before. Let's do it again. Mm-hmm. I can handle this. Yeah, so that's a good point, that when we do what we've talked about and gain some experience, we'll get greater confidence that we can handle it, because we've seen it before. We've seen it done. We've participated. You know, you don't have to have actually been the person who did it to have seen it done and to go forward with your knowledge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how should we gain confidence? You know, this is an interesting point, and I think people do this, and it's recommended by certain organizations, I suppose, like Toastmasters, which kind of encourage the ability to speak in front of people. Because if you lack confidence, you might kind of be, yeah, people call it stage fright. It is kind of a stage, I suppose, because you're the one that has to talk, you're the one that has to lead, and you're the one that has to enforce the civility rules, right? And that's the tough part to it, to enforce the civility rules nicely. Does that make sense? Because I'm always polite. I don't believe in engaging the participants in any kind of hostility. I work it around so that everyone respects me as the leader and that I have acted in a respectful manner towards them. I expect the participants to respect me, and how can I expect that if I don't respect them, right? So you have to have confidence that you can do that. And thank you. We've got quite a few new people. And thank you for everyone for being here. We've talked about the civility rules kind of frequently. Other shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. We talk about the civility rules. They're really basic when you think of civility. No being rude, no calling of names, no not taking turns. No, people are saying no fighting. I would hope not physically, but no fighting of any sort. And you see it coming and you deflect it is the key to it. Some groups, I actually post civility rules. So how are we going to get the confidence to be able to do that? Now, this is an interesting point that Michael and Evan and other people are making, that if you need to be the public speaker and you've got what people are calling stage fright, and it kind of is stage fright, you're shy, or it's hard for you to be the leader, you could practice in front of a mirror. Mm-hmm. Even a lot of people are saying practice in front of a video camera, which I like a lot better than practice in front of a mirror, because practice in front of a mirror is something that you would have done a long time ago, and maybe you do it on the spot when you are thinking about it and you're just going by a mirror. I mean, you could practice in front of a mirror like, I don't know, in a public bathroom, but you know what I mean, some place where you don't have a video. I kind of like a video camera because then you can see it again as kind of a third-party viewer. Yeah, you have to kind of distance yourself from the fact that that's you in the video, right? And you can see what you look like, how you sound, the tone of voice, because in the mirror, it's good, and it's a good idea, but that's kind of on the fly, in my opinion, while you're, I don't know, brushing your teeth. No, you can't brush your teeth because you need your mouth. But to practice it in front of a video camera, and we all, well, I don't like to say all, but a lot of folks have a video camera just on their phone, right? It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be pretty. It just has to give you the idea of what you look like and how you sound. Mm-hmm. Because surprisingly enough, I think a lot of, well, okay, I get recorded a lot. Well, for heaven's sakes, I do this show every week, so I know what I sound like. But it's kind of a practiced sound. Can I say that? It's from years of experience. I speak slowly. I speak clearly. And because of a natural ability, my voice for a woman is not very high-pitched. Mm-hmm. And And you have to be careful if your voice is very high-pitched because it doesn't come out as clearly. And it gets a little bit shrill and you don't mean it. Pardon me. And also my voice goes. No, never mind. Just kidding. But so you can practice. And a video would tell you if you sound nervous, right? Or if you look nervous. Because you look at a video as an impartial third party. That's not me on the video. It's someone else. Oh, very good point a lot of people are making. You could show the video to a trusted person, like a family member, who is not involved in any way with the group, and ask them what they think. Ask them what they think about what you look like, your kind of tone of voice, your body language, and like that. Because sometimes people have a hard time seeing it on themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. Kirsten and others are saying to that point that you could also do a mock negotiation with your mentor or your students or your family members. A lot of people have agreed with this, yes. And a lot of people are saying a mock negotiation with your mentor. Videotaped, yeah, good point. Mm-hmm. And then you can see how you did. And then someone can throw you a curveball. Someone can I don't know, get rude. What should you do about it? You see, it gives you a chance to think it through so that when it happens in real life, you're confident that you can handle it, right? Now, you never know exactly what's going to happen. That's the fun of it. Right? You never know exactly what people are going to do or what they're going to say or how it's going to work out. That's what makes negotiation fun. It, yeah, that's part of one of the best parts. Can kind of figure out in general what's going to happen and what you should do about it. Do a mock one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sarada says that and others, and we're getting this is a really good opinion that I hadn't actually thought about. You know, I always say I learn something on these shows, and I hope you do too. And the real reason that we do this is because of the up and back is so interesting, and everybody has a good opinion. So Sarada says that the real problem is that you have to work on your overall self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And the word life coach is being used. You know, and I suppose this is true. If you need to work on your confidence, it may be a kind of a general self-esteem type idea. Mm-hmm. And you might, and a life coach, which is kind of an Americanism. Yeah, people are asking what a life coach is. I'm going to say a life coach is a professional mentor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Generally speaking, when you say the word life coach, to me at least, I think of someone who's been hired on an individual basis to, I guess, work on your self-esteem and your confidence. It's a very good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, all right, the people are saying that you do not have to have a paid one, that a life coach might be like your mother, might be a family member, or a spouse or something who helps you to see how to do things in your life. Does that make sense? Yeah, a life coach. But overall self-esteem. Good point. It's good to be confident when you're the leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah, overall self-esteem is a good point. Mm-hmm. You know, Owen says that when you appear confident, then participants will feel comfortable in your leadership abilities. When you appear confident, then participants will feel comfortable in your leadership abilities. It's true. If you are confident and you have the air of confidence, right, then the participants will respect you and be comfortable that you're the right person to lead, which makes a circle and gives you more confidence, right? Yeah, it kind of makes a circle. If you're real timid and tremulous about it, then people go, why is this person in charge, you know? But if you're confident and you say, this is how we're going to do it, and you make the well, yeah, people go for mission statement or like that, but you show that you understand what needs to be done and how we're going to do it, then people feel comfortable and they have confidence in you, which makes the circle of you being more confident. Yeah, so it kind of makes a circle. Mm-hmm. Richard and others are saying that you need to be prepared with the facts, which will make you more confident. Your prep. When I ever do especially a mediation and negotiation or alternative dispute resolution, I am the most prepared person in that room. Mm-hmm. I have read everything. I have asked the various sides to give me an opinion paper of what they want, and I read it really carefully. And I have thought about it, and I have researched it, and I'm the leader. I am the most prepared of all. I never go in cold just because I've got lots of experience and I've seen this before. No, every situation is different, and every situation merits careful thought. And I carefully think before I get there. Now, do I form an opinion? I'm afraid I do, because I'm a human being. But I do not bring this, I try not to at least bring this opinion with me into the room, because things will change. Mm-hmm. And so will my opinion, maybe, of where we should head. Sometimes that happens. But I'm confident because I am prepared. You must be. You are the leader. It is your responsibility to be the most prepared person in the room. Good point. Be prepared with facts and research. Mm-hmm. Now, Key and others are saying that you also need to think through the various scenarios and prepare a response. Mm-hmm. While you are preparing for the meeting, mm-hmm, you're getting your facts down, you're getting your ducks in a row, you're getting everything, you're doing the research, you're getting the facts, you're having the sides send you their opinion papers and like that. You think about it, and you should indeed kind of work through some various scenarios and an idea of the response. Now, will they come true? 50-50. If you've got a lot of experience, you can think through the scenarios and the response because you've seen it before. But even if you've got lots of experience, people are unpredictable. You don't exactly know what's going to happen. That much is certain. A general feel for the scenarios that are going to be played out and a general feel for what the response should be, it will indeed give you more confidence in your ability to handle it. I like to think things through. When I finish reading everything that everyone's given me and thought through the facts, I kind of have a think. I sit down and I actually have a think about it, about what the various options are. And if, as is sometimes the case, because I get repeat business, I know the parties involved, I've dealt with them before, that gets factored in too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you need the time to think about it and to think through the various reasonable response that you're going to have if this happens and if that happens. And then you don't have to think of it on the fly. Yeah. It's good group dynamic control, as we talked about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we've talked about the individual, right, and our confidence in our experience and what we should do, because we're practical people, in order to increase both those things, both experience and confidence. Now let's talk about the group, because that is the other half of this that we decided to talk about. What about the group consensus challenges? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do we have as challenges as a group? Really, not so much the issues, but because the issues change. It depends what we're talking about. But as a what we refer to, somebody was smart enough to refer to as group dynamic control. right? And as leaders, that's what we really have to exert. We have to be aware of the group dynamic and keep it moving forward, which is the control part, and not let the group kind of go off into corners and get off focus, which will really cause them to kind of implode. I've seen it. I've been fortunate that I don't have it, but I've been brought in after that fact, after the group implodes. And it's kind of an interesting challenge because people already go, oh, God, I don't want to be here. We tried this already and it didn't work. Well, it's going to work this time. Mm-hmm. So what's our serious challenges with the group and the consensus and the control of the dynamic? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm going to say from looking at the responses, and thank you all for all of your participation, that the lack of full participation is really the main problem that we see. Mm-hmm. Lack of people, everyone else wants someone else to do it, right? Because there's things that needs to be done. There's work that needs to be done. There's research. There's maybe even some sort of time-consuming, go-out-and-gather-signatures type work. Usually there's not physical work. People are saying like field trips and stuff where you might need to go and see something. But anyway, everyone wishes someone else were too busy. And we do all lead busy lives, right? And it is kind of hard to make time for other things. So it has to be, the time needs to be well spent, right? And it needs to be encouraging that you're getting somewhere. Does that make sense? Yeah. And then because full participation is needed, and you can't wait for everybody else to do the work. Mm-hmm. So what should we do about this lack of full participation? Mm-hmm. Quite a few people, Joan and others, are going for the reward system, that if you do something and you do it well, you get some sort of a reward. People are saying what kind of reward. Monetary is of course, the best, let's face it. If you've got an employee group and you're working with an employer, I work with big employers a lot of times, really big multinational companies, and we come in to negotiate a dispute. I usually do. I come in to negotiate a dispute, alternative dispute resolution, or to teach a workshop or a seminar on basically speaking how not to violate civility rules, I'll call it. In the United States, it would be Title VII. It's harassment-type rules and how to get along with each other type, really mediation principles, and what to do if you've got, as a leader, as a manager. I teach a lot of managers what to do if you have an employee dispute, mm-hmm, how to respond. So that's a reward system, because if you do it well and you learn it well, you get promoted, right? Or you get to keep your job. And on a certain, depending on how the reward system is set up, sometimes I have actual input as to a, like a grade as to how people did and whether or not they fully participated. Mm-hmm. And if I don't get full participation, I can report that. And everyone knows that it's a great reward system for participation. You'd be surprised about the enthusiasm, yes, because you get to keep your job, right, or get promoted, or get a certificate of completion or something like that, depending how it's set up. People are going for a lesser reward system where the reward is really... Tracy and others are saying the reward is really praise, that you have to remember to praise. In a less formal situation, yes, recognition, praise, recognition. Having someone say thank you. Having someone point out that you did a really good job. that you really led the force, that you really put a lot of time, mm-hmm, and that you really, really went forward and led the team. This kind of recognition is very, very soul-enhancing. If you've got, yeah, and it depends on the organization. It might be within the group. But still, that's recognition of your peers that you're really A1, that you're really outstanding. And that's wonderful. Yeah, that's so confidence-enhancing. Yes, it's so wonderful, and people really do want to be praised. And remember not to stint. You know, it's just... people are so stinty with saying thank you. I say thank you all the time. People say, what? It's the darndest thing. Because people don't say thank you anymore. How about the word please that goes with it? Could you please do this? I know it's going to take a lot of time, and I apologize, but we really need it done. And you're really the person that knows how. And how can we assist you so that the burden is not all on your shoulders? Yeah, that's a wonderful phrase. You're the best. You can handle it. But we understand that it's really going to be a time burden, or you have to make some calls to people that you're connected with and like that. And what can we do to help you? And then when you do it, how about lots of praise? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about recognition? How about, you know, sometimes I work with organizations that have an annual, well, all right, it's usually an annual fundraiser, but they have an annual celebration, usually a fundraiser because why not? Because people get together to support the organization. And how about giving someone annually who did the most work, or maybe more than one someone so you don't step on toes, recognition on the front of everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't get better than that. Mm-hmm. And just remember that at least in the United States, a plaque, a certificate, something like that, it costs very little in money, and it is valued very much. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm very generous with praise. Mm-hmm. And then the person that did the most, I really recommend that they get some sort of reward, some sort of public recognition. I love it, yes. So that will keep people participating because they want to earn it, right? Yeah, and maybe a team will earn it, maybe a group. It doesn't have to be one person, because if it's just one person and the second runner-up, it's like being a beauty queen. It's kind of discouraging to not quite make it. So all the beauty queens should win something. Mm-hmm. Brian says, and others are also saying, that you need to establish time requirements for participation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like we discussed, you need to know how long this is going to take. And you have oftentimes there's a deadline for when we have to know it, when we have to do it, when it has to be done by. Mm-hmm. Time requirements. A good point. Well, you're saying that time requirements are sometimes kind of inherent in what needs to be done. For example, in the United States, and probably lots of places, different professions have continuing education requirements in order to keep up your skills. Lawyers do. We have continuing legal education, and you have to, every couple of years, you have to take classes and workshops and then certify that you've done it. So that would be a serious time requirement, that you have to do it by a certain time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, yes, good point, time requirements for participants, too, where you have to get something done by a certain date. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is when people are asking, what happens if you set a time requirement, or you give... I will call it an assignment. You ask someone to do it and they agree. A participant agrees to do something that needs to be done within a certain amount of time, right? And it's not getting done. They're not doing it. Or the time is getting very close. It might be a deadline that's an outside deadline, like getting on a ballot. and you can see that they're not returning calls, they're not answering emails, they're making excuses, the dog ate it, you know, that kind of stuff. You can see it's not working. That's a diplomatic thing. That's one of those things we have to think about the response. I'm going to say the words, it depends, because it depends on the situation and how important the person is to the group. Mm-hmm. I don't generally, unless someone is being disruptive or being rude or breaching my civility rules, I don't generally throw anyone off the group. Lose interest, they kind of leave anyway. But I hardly ever have anyone leave, and I don't really throw them off for not fulfilling their requirements, especially if they're volunteers. Now, if they're not volunteers, that's a whole different kettle of fish because you can speak with employers and things, right? Right. But let's say they're a volunteer. If you see that's not happening, you're going to have to get another person to step in because it's got to be done. You can't just not get it done. Failure is not an option. You cannot not do it. But they're not getting there. They're just not, and it's getting kind of close. You're going to have to rally the troops, call everybody in, put out the email that's very, very polite, explaining that this person has really had out, life has happened, right? And because of circumstances beyond their control, see, that's polite, even if it's really because they're too lazy, they're not making it, we need someone to help. We need someone to step in. Mm-hmm. I've done that frequently. I do it with people who are being paid, but we have a little conversation about that beforehand because it's a different thing to be paid, to be an employee, to be someone with an actual interest in their pocketbook as opposed to being a volunteer, being altruistic. Mm-hmm. And sometimes volunteers do bite off more than they can chew. They think they're going to do it, but, oh, when it comes down to it, they're kind of very important to know that the deadline's coming and to keep track of that. Mm-hmm. Keep track of how we're doing. I like to have a lot of follow-up. A lot of reminders, because you're going to have, if you don't follow up, if you don't ask, you're going to have a nasty surprise. When the deadline's there and they go, the kids got sick and I didn't make it, or they don't show up to the meeting because they haven't made it, right, you can't find them. This is something you need to know in between times if you've got an actual requirement, an actual thing that needs to be done by a certain time. Yeah. So that's what you do. I'm always polite about that. I always make the life happens excuse. Mm-hmm. No sense in being rude. What would be the point? Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So what else can we do to get participation? Fran and others are saying celebrate success. And we talk about this occasionally on these shows, and I do think that's important because sometimes the process takes a while. It's unavoidable. And it seems to be dragging, and people don't remember how far away they started, right? So every time we go a step forward, let's celebrate that. Let's remind ourselves. And, yes, a lot of people are using the word timeline. And that's what a timeline is good for. If a timeline's real valid and real important if, for example, you have these drop-dead dates where you have to have something in, something has to be done, or we only have a short amount of time to get the whole process finished. See, that's a timeline. That's serious. That's a serious timeline, and we can put dates down on it, right? Yeah, because there's an external date that go on it. There's also the kind of a timeline where you put down where you started and where you're headed, and it's a little bit softer in the middle, but we put down every time we take a step forward. I'm big on a visual. I think it's a good thing. And I'm big on making a celebration. We've gone another step forward. There are little steps, maybe, but we've gone forward. It keeps the group encouraged. Yeah. It keeps everybody motivated. Look, it's taken a while, but we're getting somewhere. Remember my polio example? It takes years. It's a big goal. But, you know, we started out with one country, and we eradicated polio step by step. And then once, you know, we managed to do it there, let's go to the next one and the next one. And pretty soon, we had kind of a lot of to celebrate, but a long way to go. You see, but it kept us all going, right? Yeah. Good point. Heidiki and others are saying that one of the most important things you can do to get participation, to keep people, is to explain the process. Yes, it's not going to be instantaneous. What we're going to do is we're going to have to get our facts together. We're going to have to make our case. We're going to have to – there will be lots of steps in the process. Let's start. You know the old expression that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step? I love that expression. Yeah, you have to start, and you have to keep going because we're working on it. Mm-hmm. The journey – people say, repeat that. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. I have no idea who said that. You can Google it. But it's a great, I think it's one of those old sayings like Confucius says. But it really says something because it seems big. Let's start. Yeah. Let's work our way towards it. And you have to explain the process. Right. And explain that we are getting somewhere. It just takes a little while. But we're getting somewhere. We're pushing forward. And if we don't keep on the process, all the achievement already gotten, or everything that we've done, it'll all go by the wayside. Yeah, it'll be wasted. See, after a while, the group gets invested, right? We get invested in the process, we've put a lot of effort into it. Can't quit now. Look how far we've come. See, that's the idea of the celebrations and the timeline and like that. Can't quit now. Look how much effort we've put into it. Yeah. Explain the process. You know, Stephen and others are saying that you make participation fun and pleasant and convivial. Yeah. That's why Recipe for Peace now goes for the food in the room, and the food is a tool for networking and for getting together. And you know what? We're going to run out of time and not do the recipes this time. And I apologize. We have that a lot, actually. I must confess it. People go, you know, you never get to the recipes. Well, we do it eventually. But the conversation's so interesting and so important. So let's do – we've got – oh, my, we don't have much time. Let's do difficulty reaching consensus. Because that's the other thing that groups have problems with. Mm-hmm. Nico and others are saying when you have the difficulty reaching the consensus, you create teams, and I would call them even subgroups. The idea is to have a smaller group reach consensus and then bring their consensus to the bigger group, which will then go, well, the team that was looking into that agreed that this was right, this was a good idea, or this was a fact. All right, we'll go forward from there. And then, it might have to be revisited. But see, you can get consensus sometimes by dividing up the group, and then having the smaller groups reach consensus and then bring the consensus to the bigger group. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And others are saying that also you need to divide the process into smaller steps. Same idea, that we can accomplish this smaller step, and whatever it is we're trying to do seems so big. It seems so hard. It seems like it's going to take forever. It's too much. You know, you get the overwhelming thing. And so you divide the whole process into smaller steps. instead of, you see, it's like Rotary with the polio. Each, the Rotary is divided into clubs. They are the smaller steps, right? Because each club is a team, well, almost, because it's a group of people who meet together once a week and discuss things, but they don't know each other. All Rotary clubs don't know all the other Rotary clubs. There's a Rotary International, too. But they divide up into teams, and they go and they take one step as a team. And so that's the idea of this, too, to divide the process into steps so that it's easier to see success. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. George and others are saying to look to examples of successful groups and see why they were successful. And yes, quite a few people, and as you know, this is close to my heart. Thank you for all of your participation. You also look to failures, too, so that you aren't one, so that you can see why. Why was this group a success and reached consensus and overcame their differences of opinion? And why did this group of the same type fail? Mm-hmm. And how can we emulate the first one and look as an example to the second one? Yeah, how can we be the one that does good? Mm-hmm, yeah, so you look to examples. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is true. A lot of people are saying you call in an expert. Yeah, and it is a good point. Sometimes you need someone to break the impasse. An impartial third party that's not the leader, to break the impasse, to give an opinion, to be called in to give their expert opinion because they have done it before. They understand the issues and they have an expert. You don't have to take the expert opinion, but it will get you all thinking about the same thing and going forward. It'll break the impasse if you bring in an expert. It doesn't have to be a paid one, but it can't be someone who is, it has to be someone impartial. It can't be someone who's from one side or the other, because that's not the right kind of expert, unless I guess you could have two, but then it won't break the impasse because then you will have, well, you'll have disagreement between the experts. Oh, bad thing. Mm-hmm. And we also, of course, advocate individual interaction. It's really why we do the timeout with the food, so that the leader can help break the impasse, help prevent uncivility, right? Have individual interaction. And really the question is, why are we not reaching consensus? Why are you insisting on this point? You see, that's an interesting question to ask. The answer to the question is, I'm kind of fond of why questions, but not necessarily in public. I like them on an individual interaction basis because it's a dangerous question in public. You never know. But anyway, it might make it worse. So I like to do that individually. I come up to the participants. We have a little talk during the timeout, for example. Yeah. So we are out of time, speaking of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening. Yes, we'll do the recipes next time or the time after that. I know I'm bad about getting to them. But it was such a good talk, an interesting one. We learned a lot. Yes, that was the best part. So thank you for being here. Thank you for participating. Thank you for listening. If you would like to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the prior shows are archived on the website. This one will get archived just about when we get off the air. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.